there's a lot of different things that nature does for us. If we should clean all the water by ourselves, that would be super expensive, and I don't even think we could do it.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome back to Circularity FM and our series featuring highlights from the Loop Forum 2025. Loop Forum is the leading Nordic business event spotlighting circularity as a key driver for building future-proof businesses. In this episode, we listen to Alexander Holm, biologist and host at Radio 3. In his keynote, Alexander discusses the current state of the biodiversity crisis, the risks posed by overusing natural resources to entire industries, and the strategies that can drive a more sustainable future. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this keynote, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm.
All right. So we're going to talk about the natural resources, biodiversity, the biodiversity crisis, and how to solve it all within approximately half an hour. How's that? First off, I'm going to say a few words about myself. Then we're going to talk about biodiversity, first of all, because we all use the word, right? You probably all use it. But are you sure what it means? I mean, even biologists, they argue about this. So let's just go through it real quick. It's super complicated, but of course, I have the correct answer. So we're going to end at that. Then we're going to talk about the crisis and then a sustainable approach to natural resources. And the last part, I don't think you're going to like because it's going to be very, very expensive. Okay? So I'm a biologist and my specialty is bat poop. Like feces from bats that I did DNA analysis on to see what they eat. This is very niche, so now I've become a radio host. And that's a told other story. Then I do some radio programs, I write some columns, and I do a lot of debate. And this debate stuff just happened because I say my opinion and someone wants to argue, and then there's microphones, and it wasn't my intention from the beginning. So let's just start with this. With biodiversity. I put in a picture, a photo of a worm called Ramisulis multicaudatum that you, of course, all know, right? It's got one head and more than 100 anuses. It lives in sea sponges where it sort of travels through them. And if one of the anuses breaks off, it can grow a new head and a new body. So that's sort of biodiversity and science fiction all in one. Does any of you know what it means? All right, well, I do. It is the multitude of life. And here I put in some images of baby platypuses just because they're cute and super weird. I mean, we're talking mammals, but they lay eggs. And they're poisonous. And they don't have any nipples, but they lactate, so they just sweat the milk and then the young have to suck it up from some hairs. So if we had an area with a lot of different species, say, the rainforest in Ecuador, for example, you'd say that there's high biodiversity because of the species richness, right? But we can have areas, in principle, with a high species richness that don't really have as high biodiversity. For example, here. This here is a boat or an ark from an old story. And it's got all the different species on Earth. But would you say that there's high biodiversity? Not really, right? I mean, if you want to make some populations of all these animals and you start out with two individuals of each species, what do you think's going to happen? Yeah, we're going to have a lot of inbreeding. Inbreeding is super difficult to breed your way out of. This principle with the survival of the fittest, it only works if someone's fit. Otherwise, they're just going to die, right? So you can breed your way out of it sometimes, but I wouldn't recommend it. So we need some more individuals. So we have this genetic variation, some different genes, and then we need a lot of species. But even here, this is from a reptile zoo in Stockholm. Here you have a lot of different species and not too much room, and you have a lot of individuals. So you're probably not going to have inbreeding. But would you say there's high biodiversity here? Not really, right? You don't have any of the interactions because all the species are separated by glass and concrete and this stuff they make the terrariums out of. So you need to have the interactions, you need to have the species richness, you need to have a lot of different individuals, so you have some genetic variety, and all of this together is biodiversity, and this is super complicated stuff. So if you're more confused now, I think that's actually good. It's not like with the climate where we can just say carbon dioxide equivalents and talk about some greenhouse gases. Here we're talking about a single word or a single number that we'd like to make that describes the whole multitude of life. And this probably can't be done. So biodiversity is just meant to be super complicated, okay? And this is something biologists we say because then we hire to do talks because only we understand it, all right? So one of the reasons that we started talking a lot about biodiversity and that some businesses have started getting interested in it is because of ecosystem services. Are you familiar with these? I've got some examples. Here is a photo that I took in Ecuador 1.5 years back. I was over there. I had to do some work. I was paid for the whole of the... all of the traveling and everything was compensated. It was super tough for me. And a lot of places in Ecuador, I stumbled upon this. Do you know what that is? Yeah, that's a mudslide. You see that all over Ecuador because it's super hilly. There's a lot of mountains and a lot of soil. And sometimes when it rains and you cut down the rainforest, it just starts sliding. So it swallows up villages and roads, and it's super bad. It happens a lot in Ecuador, in Cambodia, in Vietnam, in Papua New Guinea. It happens in a lot of countries if we cut down the rainforest because, well, the roots of the trees are not going to hold the soil then. Nature does this for free, and I can tell you, I'm pretty sure that if we had to go out and hold all this soil, us humans, it would be pretty expensive. So that's an ecosystem service, all right? Then we have another example. I can put up this image because we're not in Jutland now, so I feel safe, okay? Do you know what ecosystem service we get from the wolf? I can tell you that it's something that benefits the farmers, particularly, especially the pig farmers. Have you heard about African swine flu or African swine fever? It's this disease that can attack the pigs and it can attack the wild boar. And sometimes if the wild boar get it, they can spread it. So if a wild boar contracts this disease, you want it to be eliminated, the disease, I mean. So in Poland in 2021, they did a study where they took a wild boar that had died from African swine fever. And then they saw that if a wolf comes in and eats this wild boar, and it goes to poop somewhere, then there's no virus in the poop. So it eliminates the virus, all right? So you can say that the wolf helps to break the spread of African swine fever. I mean, that's a good argument. It's got a price, right? You don't want African swine fever, so you should want wolves. Or you could go the Danish way and just kill all the wild boar and all the wolves, right? Problem solved. So... are any of you familiar with this spider? No? Do you think it's weird to put up an image of a spider and write medicine? Okay, well, this is a Brazilian wandering spider. It's probably one of the most feared spiders in the world because it's super fast, it's super aggressive, and when it bites you, it can inflict something that is called priapism. Have you heard of this? Priapism is named after the Greek god Prietus, who has a... yeah, sorry about the language now. I can't get through this without probably swearing, but he's got a giant erection and a huge penis. And priapisme, this thing that could be inflicted by this poison, is where you get an erection that's so hard that you break the blood vessels in your penis and then you can't get an erection anymore. Right? Doesn't sound too nice. But what if you could, let's say, turn down the volume a little bit so you just get a normal erection? Sounds nice enough, right? And you have about 30% of all men, they're immune to Viagra. So there's definitely a hole in the market. And some researchers, they spotted that. And then they took the protein that inflicts the priapisme and they made that into, or put it into a gel that you can put in your penis and you can get an erection. So this spider actually, it sort of helps us in the bedroom. Right? If someone pointed at this spider 100 years ago and said, I think that's going to help us have sex someday, you'd think they were a bit weird, but they were actually correct. Do you know this lizard? This is called a Gila monster. It's not that big. It's like this big. It's not a monster. It's just a lizard that lies buried in the ground most of the time in the southern states of the US. And it's got a protein in its poison that's called XMP4. And from XMP4, you've made something called semaglutid. Have you heard of this? Have you heard of Novo Nordisk? Wegovy? Ozempic? A lot of money. They made Wegovy and Ozempic taking, or they sort of used a protein from the poison of this lizard to make this medicine. So we all Danes sort of owe a lot of money to this here lizard. We don't pay anything though, because it's an ecosystem service. Nature does something for us, which is super helpful, and we just get it for free, okay? There's pollination too, you know, when bees and flies and mosquitoes and hummingbirds and geckos and whatever, they go about and they pollinate different crops. They can do that to a certain extent. But they can't do it if we use too many pesticides. Or at least the insects cannot, because then we kill all of them off. And now we have areas in, this is from China, where they have to pollinate by hand. So this guy, he's going about with that weird little brush thing and pretending to be a bee. If the bees do it, it's free. If we have to do it, we have to pay, and it's just a lot of trouble. So there's a lot of different things that nature does for us. Cleans water. Would you drink this? If you walked out of here and you saw a little puddle of water, would you drink it? No, probably not, right? But if it's been down through all of the different layers and it's out through the ecosystems and the water molecules have traveled for about, well, it takes about 40 years, and you take it out the tap, then you drink it, right? If we should clean all the water by ourselves, that would be super expensive, and I don't even think we could do it. So we need the ecosystems. We also need them for climate purposes, because half of all the greenhouse gases that we emit is absorbed by nature, by the ocean, by the soils, by the forests, or at least the forests that we don't cut down. And there's just tons of all these ecosystem services. And the value of them is so high that half the global GDP is dependent on them. Some of these different industries are more dependent on ecosystem services than others. If you take something like digital communication, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can cut down all the forests in the world and still send an email, right? But agriculture, fisheries, forestry, etc., they need all this stuff. So we do need ecosystems and we do need nature. And if we keep doing this, where we pluck out species and we pluck out habitats and areas and we just destroy, 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 we can end up with something like this. And of course, I'm super biased because, you know, I'm a biologist and a bat poop specialist, but I still think it's better off if we stay here. All right? So, if we look at the biodiversity crisis in 2025, it's not looking too good. There's one important notion here, and that is that it's normal to go extinct. I know that can sound provocative, but most of the species on Earth, they have gone extinct. 99% of all species have already died out. I mean, they've had plenty of time to die, several billion years, right? But this is what you see here. Species go extinct all the time. It's called the background extinction rate. If you take the, like, take some random mammal, or like the average mammal, it is on Earth, from the time that it originates till it dies out, it takes about a million years. For reptiles, it's a bit more. So if you want to fall in love with an animal, take a turtle or something, because the mammals are sort of short-lived. But it's normal to go extinct. What's not normal is these spikes, these mass extinction events. The last one we had was 63 million years ago when a meteor that was about 10 kilometers in diameter, it collided with the right side of Mexico. So it sort of bumped in there, and then we had tsunamis, we had earthquakes, we had everything that you do not want. And that destroyed about 85% of all life on Earth. This happened, it took 10 million years from when the meteor struck till it had all died out. But the extinction rate that came after the meteor strike is almost the same extinction rate that we see today. Okay? Difference is that the one today is caused by humans, and the one back then was caused by a meteor. And there's five main reasons that we have this biodiversity crisis. The first one is loss of habitat. We cut down rainforest, or we drain areas because we want to grow some crops or use the water for something. And there's a lot of examples. We overexploit resources. I've underlined that because it's sort of the theme of today, right? We burn too much stuff. Oil, coal, gas, biomass. We just like to burn stuff. It's how we get rid of it. And how we make energy. We pollute. If you want to see pollution, go take a look in the coastal areas of Danish waters. You're going to see a lot of nitrogen surplus pollution there. And then invasive species. That's a totally different subject. If we take the habitat destruction, then we have some pretty extreme examples. But one of the ones I want to point to today is this one from the Kazakhstan-Uzbekistan area. This is, or it used to be, the Aral Lake. Have you heard of this? Yes, a lot of nodding. That's good. It used to be the fourth biggest lake in the world. It was almost one and a half size, times the size of Denmark. But we drained it. We drained almost all of it by diverging the rivers that go into it. And we put all the water into irrigation for some fields where we grew mainly one product. You know what that was? I see many of you are wearing it. Cotton. You can sort of say that we changed one of the biggest lakes in the world into denim. We did this within 40 years. When you do something like that, you're going to destroy the wetland. You're going to destroy the ecosystem because this is no longer a lake. And I think these boats, they've fallen in value, which is not good. And the fishery or the fishing sector in this lake, it has gone, let's just say it's gone downhill. All right, this is not a sustainable use of water resources. This is just close your eyes and press down the speeder. We also do a lot of overfishing. This is a very big, probably one of the most widespread overexploitation uses we have of natural resources. This is a figure that shows the overfished amount of commercially exploited fish species, then the maximally sustainably fished ones, and then the underfished ones. Underfished, that's a weird word, right? Do you ever look at birds and say, they're underhunted, and mushrooms, and go, they're undercollected? You don't really do that because this is made by the UN, and they look at food, and then they see fish as a resource, and this explains it. But what we're seeing here, overfishing more and more, is sort of the fishery sector eliminating itself. It's what we in Danish call a selvmål. You know, in soccer, when you score on your own goal, that's what's going on here. We have it in Danish waters too. This is from Kattegat, which is a bit north of here. We have some of the most bottom trawled and you could say some of the most overfished waters in the world in a way. This shows the landings of codfish in Kattegat, and you can see it's just plummeted because we caught all of them. And now you have some people saying, it's those damn cormorants and the seals. But I mean, they didn't really pull up millions of kilos of them. But then again, this is another example of over-exploitation of natural resources. And it's not really a good idea because at some point you're going to run out. This is how it looked with the codfish fishery in Denmark in, I think this image is from 87. Look how big these codfish are. I mean, you can, if you're a cormorant, you can't eat these. They're too big. And this is how it looks in, this is from 2018. Fishing, it was scientific vessel fishing in the same area using the same methods. So you can see it's quite a big difference and we have lost a lot. And there's some weird examples from the world. This is from the States back when we came there and we colonized between 1820 and 1880. We killed somewhere between 30 and 60 million bison. So if you want to go bison hunting, it's well, it's become more difficult. Let's say it like that. Instead, we make a lot of this. We make beef. We make beef a lot in the US and then down in the Amazon region. The majority of what's being cut down of the Amazon rainforest is being cut down to make beef. We're talking somewhere between 70 and 80%. The problem is that when you cut down the rainforest, all of this evaporation that does of the water takes up the water with its roots, it evaporates them when it makes photosynthesis, and then it generates rain or precipitation, right? But if you cut down the rainforest too much, it doesn't do that, and then it doesn't generate all the rain. So you sort of have rainforest without rain. And that's a problem, right? And they've done some modeling on this, and they can see that if they keep cutting down the rainforest to make beef or grassland, they're going to reduce the possible, or like the pasture land area by 37% in 25 years. And they're going to, even with all the technological innovation and everything, they're going to decline the bee production by 25% in 25 years. So you can see this is another business eliminating itself by over-exploiting the natural resource. That's the Amazon rainforest. Okay? We also make a lot of this in the Amazon. Do you know what's going on here? They're making soy. You use soy, you use it for to feed animals. You use it to feed cattle and pigs and chicken and salmon. And when you cut down so much rainforest to make soy, you end up with the same problems as when you make all the beef. You lose rainforest, you're going to lose precipitation, it's going to be too dry, and then you can't make soy. So we have a business eliminating itself, okay? We have a grim example of this in Denmark where we talk a lot about food safety, but we import a lot of soy. We import about 1.5 million tons in Denmark every single year, and there's a lot of protein in soy. Then we use all the soy to make pig, or like pig meat, and that means that we import more protein than we create or produce. And this protein deficit is so big that the Danish agricultural sector feeds minus 7 million people if you look at protein, because we lose all of it in the process. Okay, so if we're talking food safety, or we're talking, if we're talking about sustainability, not cutting down rainforests, etc., you just shouldn't follow this example here. And we can see that the Amazon is drying off. This is from the Rio Negro. It's one of the rivers that lead into the Amazon River. This is an image from last year in the autumn. This used to be a river. If we look at it now, it is a river again because there's rainy season and the dry season, but it usually is not this dry. It's going in the wrong direction. Also because of these, they're making a lot of eucalyptus plantations in the Cerrado, which is this savanna-like habitat that they have in Brazil. And when they cut down rainforest and they make monoculture with eucalyptus, it makes it a lot more dry. And because of this, they have in the region with the Cerrado, they have the worst drought in 700 years. If it keeps drying up, they can't make eucalyptus. So this stuff with making rainforest into plantations looks a little bit like a sector or an industry eliminating itself. You can see there's sort of a recurring theme here, right? Have any of you seen this? This change in logos? Okay, this is used to be the old logo for the forestry department in Indonesia. This is a Bodhi tree. It's a sacred tree and sort of shows that we should care for the forest, etc. This over here, the new logo, do you know what this is? That's a palm oil tree. So they changed this, and then the minister, like the leader of Indonesia, this guy called Prabowo Subianto, he came out and says, It's not deforestation if you cut down rainforest to make palm oil plantation, because they're both forest. And then they said, he said that they've identified 20 million hectares of forest that can be converted to agricultural areas. If they do this, it's going to be very dry and they're going to have some pretty shitty soil. So we have potentially a business eliminating itself, okay? Also, we degrade agricultural lands. I mean, you can, when you make agriculture, you're dependent on the microorganisms down in the soil and all the nutrients, etc. And if we do agriculture in the wrong way, or if we press the soils too hard, you're not going to be able to grow the lands. And we can see that now it's about 1/3 of the agricultural land on Earth that's become severely degraded. And if we keep going at it like this and destroy the ecosystems in the soil, we're going to have less food on Earth. And that's a problem because we have more and more people. Okay? Looks like a business eliminating itself, I think. So that's sort of the conclusion. If we overexploit natural resources like this, we're going to run out. I mean, we got a finite amount and we can keep saying that we don't, but it's probably going to be a self goal. So how do we solve it? How can we go about this? The good news is that we know about the limits as to how hard we can press the planet. I mean, we know the planetary boundaries. I heard Catherine Richardson, one of the authors behind these. She was here yesterday. And it's a good thing to know the limits, because then you know where you should stop. And we know where we should sort of start going in the other direction, right? The bad news is that out of the 9 planetary boundaries, we've exceeded 6 of them already. And every time they do a new review and look at how the planetary boundaries are doing, they're seeing that we're going in the wrong direction. So we need to change that. We do know, though, that we can go and sort of live in this safe and just space for humanity, where we can still have a high living standard, but we just don't surpass all of these boundaries so aggressively. This is probably the long investment, right? This is where we want to go if we want to stay here and want to keep using natural resources without overusing them. Another piece of good news is that there's some very, very easy solutions. And there's some things that we can do that won't reduce our living standard. Actually, it'll probably do the opposite. And it's going to solve a lot of the problems. For example, we can take, and I know most people are not going to like this, but we can have fewer animals. If we look at the area of the earth that's used now to produce meat and milk, it's about 1/4. It's the thing that takes up the biggest proportion of the livable area of the planet right now. The amount of land that's used to produce all of these animals is bigger than the amount of land where we have forests. And it's just going in the wrong direction. So we can say, let's do a little bit less of that. And then we can avoid a lot of the biodiversity crisis, and we can offset the climate crisis by approximately 30 years. Then we're just going to have to eat something else instead. But I mean, we gain a planet. I think that's a good trade-off. Also, we can stop burning stuff. I mean, oil, coal, gas, we can all agree on this, right? But we also need to look at the use of biomass, because we're just burning more and more forest and we keep calling it renewable energy. Some people even say it's good because then we can have more plantations where we grow all these trees that we burn, and they're saying, oh, we're going to have more forest cover. But it's not really forest, it's just plantation. And burning forest is not going to solve the biodiversity crisis or the climate crisis. I don't think that's controversial. Is that controversial? No, good. One thing we can also do is we can protect more areas. I mean, if we make protected areas on land where we say here we cannot exploit natural resources, then in these areas, particularly if it's at sea, they're going to build up. If you have protected areas at sea, all these blue ones, then the fish in there, the shellfish, all of the animals, they're going to thrive because we don't kill them. And then they're going to grow and the populations are going to overspill to other areas, because a fish doesn't know whether it's in a protected area or not. We have super good experiences with this. So if we get more of this, the global fishery is going to be fine. If we get less of this, we're probably not going to have that many fish to eat. If we look on land, we have protected areas, that's all the green stuff, and then we have something called other effective conservation measures areas. And this is areas where you protected nature, but it wasn't really the purpose. So that's, it sounds a bit weird, right? One example is if you look between the border between South and North Korea, if you go in there, you're going to be shot if you're human. But if animals venture in there, plants or mushrooms or whatever, we're going to be fine. So actually, you have quite a nice zone in there with high biodiversity because it's super dangerous for humans. We have another example here in Europe where almost 40 years ago, we had an area about the size of the Danish island Fyn, where people disappeared from one day to the other, and they were replaced with radioactivity. I'm talking about Chernobyl. Chernobyl is a weird example, and it's a weird study area, because we can see what happens when humans leave an area and are replaced with radioactivity. And the conclusions are that it's actually sort of good for biodiversity, except the animals, they don't live too long. They all have cancer. They've got weird limbs. Some of the ladybirds are supposed to have about 7 dots, and they have 13. And I mean, we have good experiences with this. Nature can do fine if we leave. We can sort of go in different directions. We can keep going as now, not good. We can do a little bit more conservation, that's all right. And then we can just go about all these things and reduce consumption and all, and that's going to be good. I know time's over, mate. I'm going to go real quick about the last ones. This one is probably the most important one. If you want to pollute, you need to pay for it, right? It's a bit like if you break it, you pay. This one, it's very difficult to implement because it's going to be the biggest structural change in the whole of the history of mankind, I think. And most businesses are not going to like this because it's going to be super expensive. But it's probably going to work. And then we need to, if we take out some natural resources, we need to take out as little as we can. And we need to reuse what we already have in the system. Because every time you take out something from nature, it's sort of left a little bit weaker. Does that make sense? And so we need to leave nature alone for as much as we can and then take whatever we have and just keep using it. All right, so don't buy new stuff. Then I'm going to leave you with a photo of whale poop, because when whales, they poop in the water, if it's a region that doesn't have a lot of nutrients, there's going to be algal blooms, and they do photosynthesis. They collect some greenhouse gases and deposit them on the seabed floor, and that's super good for climate. So you can say that whales, they make the world greener with this shit, which I think is a very hopeful statement. Then there's an image of an echidna, another mammal that lays eggs, and then I've made this for you. If you scan this one, you can have the sources for all of the stuff I've said, all of the different reports, everything's in there, all collected, assemble together for you. So that's that. Thank you.
This was the second episode in our series about the Loop Forum 2025. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this keynote, please sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.